geeks usually don't understand policy and politics, and that should change.
Nerd Night is an Austin tradition for techies, activists, weirdos, and fellow travelers. Locals gather at Austin's North Door to see presentations, demonstrations, or odd behavior by their fellow local nerds. In a recent Nerd Night session, EFF Austin gave presentations on securing your home network, net neutrality, and the history of EFF Austin. This time on the Plutopia News Network podcast, 20 Minutes into the Future, an in-depth timeline of EFF Austin and Austin tech culture, presented by Plutopia co-founder John Lubkowski.
Well, in the North Door, a great venue. Fantastic. All right. So to talk a little bit about the history of EFF Austin and sort of how Austin became as wired as it is, I really have to talk about EFF, and a lot of what I'm talking about happened in the 90s. There we go. So EFF is the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Talk more about that as we go. And EFF Austin was the first and only chapter of EFF, which we'll also talk about. And what makes them relevant, both of these organizations, one of which, EFF Austin, I've been part of, you know, for like 28 years or something like that. So these organizations have a real commitment to digital freedom, whatever that might mean to you, and it can mean a lot of things, a community focus, and a focus on community development, geek community, communities like Nerd Night communities, a focus on people over technology. Technology is important, but people are more important. And a focus on talent over money. EFF Austin has never had much money. We've done some fundraising, you know, and we've had a little bit of money from time to time. But usually we're pretty broke. We have very talented people, you know, and they're doing great things. So why EFF and EFF Austin came to be or exist? Early on, somebody saw, and we're going to talk about this more too, law enforcement doesn't necessarily get technology. They may be getting better at it, but at the time they didn't really know much about it at all. Legislators usually don't understand technology very well, which means that they can pass really bad technology policy if somebody's not helping them out. Policy development is not usually driven by what's best. You all know what a circus the political environment is, and you've been seeing a lot of that lately. Political decisions are not necessarily driven by what's best, and you have to have a voice, and you have to be loud, you have to have some volume to your voice to try to get the best policy, especially around technology and things like privacy. Geeks usually don't understand policy and politics, and that should change. And that's something that we've been working on. So the Electronic Frontier Foundation started coming together around 1990. Those three guys over on the right of that slide, Mitch Kapoor, the guy who started Lotus 1-2-3, if you don't remember that, that was like Excel back then. And John Perry Barlow, who was raised a rancher, he was raised on a ranch, but he was pretty well off from ranching, and he found himself living with the Grateful Dead and writing songs with Bob Weir. And you know, he was like kind of a wealthy, smart guy who came to understand technology and psychedelics both pretty well. And that guy on the right is John Gilmore, who was like, I think, the third guy hired by Sun Microsystems, which means he made a lot of money there. And he, you know, was kind of a force and a devoted, committed open source guy, among other things, a GNU guy. So where this started was here. This slide's pretty important. Barlow was asked to pull some people together and have a conversation about like the evolving computer networks and kind of where technology was going. This really early on, right? This is like, this was probably 89 when this happened. They did it on the Well, Whole Earth Electronic Link, the Well, which was a seminal online community that actually formed in 1985 as a bulletin board system formed by the Whole Earth people. And I joined the Well, you know, like around 1989 or 90. The Well was a lot of what we have on the internet today sort of emerged from things that were happening on the Well back then. And I could go on all night about that. But one of the things that happened on the Well was the formation of the Electronic Frontier Foundation. And what Barlow did was, initially, was he put this roundtable discussion together, and there were a couple of guys he invited into the discussion. These guys up here, Fiber Optic, Mark Abeen, and Elias Lapidopoulos, who called himself Acid Freak. So these guys were hackers, and they liked to show off, and they liked to show how they could, like, get stuff. They could break into systems and get stuff, but not for any malignant purpose, just to show off, basically, right? So there was a lot of that stuff going on back then. And these guys were in this conversation, and they were like, there was tension between them and Barlow, and at one point, Fiber Optic grabs all of Barlow's security records and posts them in the conversation, which really kind of freaks Barlow out. But the thing that occurred to Barlow was that guys like this, who are not really malignant, they're just like, they're kind of assholes, but they're not really that malignant, they could get in a hell of a lot of trouble. And he had a visit from an FBI guy, something related to Operation Sun Devil. And in his conversation with this FBI guy, who I think was visiting him because this conversation, which was published on Harper's Magazine, they pulled it off the Well and edited it and published it in Harper's. And you can find it, incidentally, at that URL down there. This FBI guy came to Barlow's, I guess, ranch and talked to him, interviewed him, and Barlow could tell that the guy did not know anything. He didn't know anything about technology. And he realized that if guys in law enforcement and if people who are making policy don't understand technology, they can make really bad laws. And to his mind, being a rancher, this is the frontier. And it's the electronic frontier. The laws are not settled yet. We don't really have a clear set of laws, and we could make really bad ones. And that's why Barlow started thinking that we needed some way to talk about this. And he was a member of the Well, as was Mitch Kapoor. He mentioned it to Mitch. John Gilmore got in the conversation. Mitch was flying along and decided to land at Barlow's ranch and talk to him. And that conversation led to this, where they said they were legally constituting the Electronic Frontier Foundation. It was going to be a small organization at the time. They were putting a bunch of money together for education, lobbying, and litigation in the areas related to digital speech and the extension of the Constitution into cyberspace. Laudable. So then this happened. That guy on the left is Steve Jackson. You guys play Steve Jackson games? We got any RPG guys in here? Yeah, all right. So Steve was a publisher of essentially books that were rules for role-playing games. And he had a guy working for him named Lloyd Blankenship, really great guy, who also called himself Mentor and was a hacker and was a member of something called the Legion of Doom. So the Legion of Doom was a bunch of people like, you know, like Fiber Optic and Acid Freak. Eric Bloodaxe, a.k.a. Chris Goggins, was kind of their I guess, leader, they published an online publication called FRACK, P-H-R-A-C-K. And a guy named Lynn Rose, who was Terminus, was another one of the guys in this organization, broke into Bell staff and grabbed some documents related to the 9/11 system. And those got distributed in FRAC. They put them in FRAC, and this newsletter was going out to various places, and one of the places it went was the Steve Jackson Games. Long story short, the Secret Service showed up at Steve Jackson Games and also at Lloyd's house. And Lloyd's standing there, and he's hearing these people talking about how they're going to batter the door down at Steve Jackson Games. And he says, "No, I've got the key. I'll open it, you know." So they took him over and opened the door. They took all of Steve's computers. Steve was befuddled. He had no idea what was going on. He could not figure it out. He showed up on other local BBSs, like right away, saying, "Somebody, the Secret Service just came and took all my computers. I have no idea why." Well, you shouldn't really fuck with Steve Jackson. He's not a guy who's going to take it lying down. Plus, on that same bulletin board system where he was talking about this, there's a guy named Mike Godwin who was just hired by these EFF guys to be their counsel. And Bruce Sterling is on there too, and he knows all of these guys, and he's on the well. A bunch of us are on the well. And all this information gets passed over to the EFF guys, and this becomes their first big case. Steve Jackson versus the U.S. Secret Service, and Steve won the case, and it was a big deal. And Steve went out to his, he invited a bunch of people out to Steve Jackson Games, and got up on a picnic table and made a call to arms and said, "We're going to start the first chapter." He had got, you know, he talked to the EFF guys about it, and they said, "Well, we're going to make a chapters organization. It's going to be community-based. We're going to have chapters all over the country." And Steve says, "Well, we should have the first one in Austin. You know, Austin's really pretty, you know, there's a lot of, like, smart internet activist types there." Believe it or not, this is 1990, but there were some. So we had the right kind of people, and we were the right kind of place, and they said, "Sure, let's do that." So you can see in this early issue of The Effector, it's talking about EFF Austin, the first chapter. We were the first chapter of EFF. This, by the way, this really got the Secret Service upset. This was in Galley's at Steve's, and they said, "We found a manual for computer crime." There it is. So EFF said that they were going to support the effort to demonstrate that the Secret Service has exercised prior restraint on publications, limited free speech, conducted improper seizure of equipment and data, and undue force, and generally conducted itself in a fashion which is arbitrary, oppressive, and unconstitutional. Yeah. Steve won that case. A guy named Pete Kennedy here in Austin was a litigator. There's a... I think you can find a video somewhere of the 25th anniversary of the Steve Jackson Games thing. I think that may be on YouTube or somewhere. And you can, And you can hear Pete, among others, talking about the case. Anyway, so we're going to have this great community, this chapters organization. But then Mitch meets Jerry Berman, this guy over here, who I think at the time was working for ACLU, and Jerry convinces him that EFF should not, I don't think that he was really overt about saying it shouldn't be a community organization, but he says, "You should definitely be doing lobbying, and you should move to Washington, D.C. and do, you know." So that's kind of what happened. And in 1993, EFF Austin and a bunch of other organizations around the country who were gearing up to be chapters for EFF met in Georgia, at Georgia Tech. I was there. And we're there to create this chapters organization with the EFF board. But they had been on a retreat. They walked in, Jerry's with them, and they say, "Well, we're really sorry, but we decided not to be a chapters organization." So they didn't do the community thing. There's a lot more I can tell you about that, but the main point here is that they sort of dropped the ball on that and never completely recovered. But we kept going as an online community organization. And this is something that I posted back then about it. It basically said, we were free as organizations to develop ourselves into a network of cyberactive organizations. And we sort of did that for a while. Not many of those organizations are left, but hey, guess what? EFF Austin is still going strong. So we went out and started having what we called cyber dogs, which were just like community events, people hang out. We had events that were more focused that I can show you in a minute, but we also just, you know, sort of had the equivalent of mixers, but geeks kind of hanging out together and swapping stories. And that became we started building a real community here in Austin. And this is something that kind of, this is an article that I wrote for Electric Minds back in, I forget, 95, 96. And this kind of talks about all of the stuff that was going on at the time. We also started developing alliances. One of them was really pretty easy. Fringeware was a company that I started with Paco Nathan, a kind of genius coder who's the guy in the, that's the cover of the first Fringeware review. And Fringeware and EFF Austin, the robot group, got together to put on RoboFest. The robot group used to do RoboFest every year. And we all just sort of came together with them and turned it into this great cyberspace event. And on one of those years, a guy named Doug Barnes got us to build a LAN within the RoboFest environment where we did all sorts of interesting things. There were like arts things going on over that LAN. They built a MOO called Metaverse, which influenced an author named Neal Stephenson, who later wrote about it in a book called Snow Crash. We had a bunch of events. We had a SysOp Liability Conference, which unfortunately was on the same day as the Super Bowl, so it was a little bit underattended. Bruce Sterling organized an event called CopCon and got Gail Thackeray, who was the Sun Devil prosecutor, to come in and give us a talk. We had a crypto conference where the board of directors from EFF came to Austin, and we pulled a bunch of other people together to have this whole big conference on cryptography. At the time, encryption was, it was a question about how legal it could be for ordinary people to use encryption. And that was kind of a big deal then. We had a virtual communities event that was funded by the Whole Earth Catalog people because they were in town for a publisher event. We had a Cyber Rights 96 event back in 96. We had a bunch of people, Mike Godwin from EFF, Nan Beeson from ACLU, Todd Lappin from Wired, Shabir Safdar from Velder's Telecommunications Watch, who pretty much invented the way campaign emails are done now. We got all of those people together and had a big deal here in Austin, and then we went down to Houston and had another thing down there. So those are the kinds of things that we were doing. This is a few other things. Time's running short, so I'm going to skip this one a little bit. And mentioned that the Communications Decency Act was the last big thing that we worked on, turning web pages black. After that, EFF Austin tried to become EF Texas, and that didn't work out too well, and it all just kind of stopped. So, EF Texas was formed in around 97, and it disappeared pretty quickly. But in 2001, I had been living in Colorado and came back, and at South by Southwest ran into Steve Jackson and said, we should reform because there's still a lot of shit going on. So we did it. We started again, and we've been going strong ever since. And we're still doing all kinds of cool events, projects. We currently have monthly meetings, second Monday of the month at Capital Factory at 7. We worked with an organization, speaking of making Austin wired or wireless, Austin Wireless City was an organization EFF Austin worked with, and Chris Boyd, who was here, was a big part of that. They would go out and go to coffee houses, restaurants, various kinds of venues, and say, hey, you ought to have a Wi-Fi hotspot. So, you know, there wasn't much Wi-Fi in Austin at the time. Pretty soon there was so much Wi-Fi around that everybody figured they had to have it. And that's one of the reasons Wi-Fi became so pervasive in Austin and so quickly and so early. We had a big steampunk event in 2007 during South by Southwest. We had in 2001, Cory Doctorow and I put together a South by Southwest party that really went off really well. And after that, we did it every year, one way or another, and they just got bigger and bigger. And this was a pretty huge event. You can see White Ghost Shivers was playing there. Plutopia, an organization I started, my pal Scoop Sweeney was part of that too. And we now have a Plutopia podcast where I should mention that these talks are going to be published as podcasts at plutopia.io. We started the Plutopia organization, and Plutopia events went on for several years. We started at Schultz Garden with one that was partly an EFF thing, and we also had Bill McKibben and a bunch of environmentalists there, as well as a bunch of tech geeks. So this is one last thing. There is an oral history of EFF Austin. You can find this link on our website, EFFAustin.org. And there's a lot more detail there about the kinds of things I talked about tonight. And otherwise, this is me. Questions? By the way, thanks to Nerd Night for having EFF Austin in here tonight. This is just
thank
wonderful.
You. Well, I'll start off with an easy one for you. What was your handle on the well?
John L. J-O-N-L.
Classic.
I used that handle everywhere I could.
All right. Fair enough. Okay.
People used to call me John-L.
John-L.
I said, no, it's John L. Yeah.
All right. So, questions? Yes.
You mentioned meetups every month. What other ways do people have to volunteer their time, other things they might have to offer for EFF and other organizations?
You mentioned that there are meetups every month. What other ways are there for people to volunteer their time to help the cause?
Well, the meetups are a good gateway drug to kind of get you on board with us, but we have been talking about, like, a bit without really having done much yet about forming a 501c4. We've been able to do some lobbying because we never quite got our 501c3, so we're working on that too. But as we work on getting a C3, we're also working on getting a C4, ramping up our activities, doing a bunch more lobbying. We have a bunch of interns right now that are working with us on some legislative analysis stuff. We have a recent law school graduate, Alex Sharistani, has been working with those guys, and he's really fired up. He's got a lot of things that he wants to do. So there's actually, we're sort of like on the verge of kind of exploding into a lot of stuff, because really, this is the time for it. Mm-hmm. This is the time for geeks to become politically active, you know? And to do it on our own terms, I guess, is what I want to say. So what I would say is show up at the meetings and follow the website and talk to us. And, you know, one of the traditions of EFF Austin, I mentioned that land thing that we did at RoboFest. That was Doug Barnes showing up and telling us, hey, you guys, we really ought to do this. And somebody agreed to kind of sponsor the thing, somebody on the board, and we just ran with it. So if you came to us with a proposal for something that you thought would be a great fit, we could do it. Now, by the way, I haven't mentioned it. You're going to hear Kevin Welch in a minute. He's the new president of EFF Austin. I did that for 15 years, but Kevin is phenomenal, and he's doing a lot of great work. And if you have an idea, you could talk to him first, and he would help you figure out how to bring it into the org.
Donate.
And donate.
Absolutely. Okay, moving across.
No, it's not tax deductible yet.
Go ahead.
Differentiate yourself from 2600, which is another local political
sector. How do you differentiate yourself from 2600?
Yeah, I don't. I kind of didn't think of them as local. No, actually, we know 2600 well. Emmanuel and I have hung out before. Emmanuel Goldstein, and who's really his real name's Eric Corley. He wanted to be like Emma Goldstein, but he's Emmanuel. Anyway, so these 2600 meetups happen all over the place. And CF, Computers Freedom and Privacy Conference, in I think 93, Emmanuel was there and had a bunch of his crew with him. And we were walking down the street in San Francisco one night and saw these guys all clustered around a payphone, having a like a phone freakers meeting. How we distinguish ourselves is they're more like focused on the hacker ethos, and I would say that we're more interested in, well, we're very interested in educating everybody about the technology, and we're very interested in getting better, like policy. We want to be somewhat policy focused, and I don't think that they, I can't imagine Emmanuel, though he might do it, I couldn't imagine him going down to the Capitol and lobbying, but we would do it, and we have done it.
Great. Yes.
What surprises you the most about the internet in 2018, and what do you fear the most about the internet moving forward?
What surprises you the most about what the internet's become in 2018, and what frightens you most about the future of the internet?
Hey, the answer may be the same for both of them. Fake news. Propaganda. I didn't realize in all the years I was advocating for the internet and evangelizing, it never occurred to me that it would become a petri dish for really nasty propaganda. And the fact that that stuff exploded within, well, I mean, we've seen it creeping up for a while, so I can't say it's a real surprise. It's not like, oh, suddenly I realize that we can have fake news because of the internet. But really, what's happened is that we've allowed people to build their so-called filter bubbles, you know, silo themselves, and we've given, there's a way to like send stuff directly into their lizard brain through internet, like through email, you know, and through Facebook posts and so forth. And we opened ourselves completely to propaganda from state actors outside the US. I didn't really envision that happening. And I think that it's a huge challenge. The big challenge today is to try to help people broadly become more have better digital literacy. Yeah, including people in rural areas who are just kind of connected, you know, and they get just enough stuff to create trouble, kind of, you know. We really need to have a campaign to get out and help people broadly, all over the place, understand better what they're seeing in their feeds.
Another question? Yes.
So a lot of these early guys, you talk about fiber optic and acid freak, they would act hard, you know, they were like psychonauts, they carried this rebel iconography. I noticed a lot of things, you know, between the cyberpunk thing and the satanic panic of D&D in the 80s. Do you think a lot of the self-mythologizing that these guys do into being kind of a trap where they get these moral busybodies and dupes politicians together to kind of make it more difficult for the proper environment for good policy to thrive where just bad laws get passed because they're afraid?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that was part of Barlow's concern back then, was that these guys are going to scare people, you know, because they wanted to act scary. And I remember going to, again, that CFP, Computers, Freedom, and Privacy, walking up and seeing those guys kind of sitting there looking at the hotel keys, kind of trying to figure out how they work. You know, they're just, they like to hack things, and they like to show off about it, and they really didn't think a lot about, I mean, They're not going to worry about optics, right? So that is a problem, though maybe we've got bigger problems today than that, but still, yeah, I agree, yeah.
Yes.
This might kind of dovetail off of that, but what's one thing you wish lawmakers, policymakers would get right about the internet and about the digital frontier? That's
so,
currently really getting
wrong. So what's one thing that you wish lawmakers and policymakers would get right about internet that they're currently not getting?
That thing they call net neutrality.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hear, hear.
You know, I mean, they got it right, and then somebody got in there and got it really wrong, you know? And they, yeah, I mean, I don't think the politicians on either side of the fence necessarily understand net neutrality all that well and what it really represents and why it's important. So, yeah, that's
but, something
but Time I
Warner
wish they'd
explained
get right.
it to them. Don't they get it now?
Yes, indeed. We've had many conversations with those guys. They're very helpful, Time Warner. For Spectrum.
Okay, one more question. We have time for one more. Who's... There were hands up. Put them back. Yes, up there.
Hey, thank you. I wanted to circle back on your previous answer about the unexpected consequences of state actors online. And obviously, if we get to the heart of the EFF, you have a balance between individual liberties and state control and state regulation. Where do you draw the line? How do you propose to find a balance in the middle there?
How do you find a balance between personal liberties and security? Did I get summarize that correctly?
Of state actors that interfere in the democratic process, for example.
Right, and yet prevent foreign actors from interfering with the democratic process.
I mean, I think you prevent foreign actors from interfering by making people smart enough not to be interfered with, you know? I mean, they're interfering by doing psyops. And a bit of that digital literacy I was talking about could go a long way to fix that problem. But as far as where that line is drawn, that's the hard problem, right? It's kind of it's almost a wicked problem. And that's why people like the people in this room need to take some time to get a little bit more active. And also work and talk with each other about these problems and try to think about how the solutions, how we can get the solutions. And I think the hard part is going to be for Chris Boyd, all that stuff he said to me was like Martian language, right? In the talk earlier, I didn't really understand some of what he was talking about because he's a total network geek and he's really got his head around that stuff. And that's kind of the way it is. There's a lot of people who wouldn't understand us if we tried to explain net neutrality to them. We got to figure out how to do that. You know, we got to figure out how to help people understand that they're being manipulated through propaganda. And it's hard. It's all going to be really hard, but it's not going to happen unless we do it.
I'm going to give you one more question from the Twitterverse.
Okay.
How has Austin as a city or community changed since the 90s? And would EFF specifically, and would EFF exist if it had to be founded today? Could something like that happen today?
I think EFF could appear today, but I don't know. That's a hard one. It's probably a little bit less likely. I think it would be a different organization. But, you know, same is true of Whole Foods. What was the other? There was another part to that question.
How has Austin changed?
Oh, yeah. Well, you can't get anywhere. How many people found a place to park easily tonight? Yeah, I mean, we're densely populated, but really the demographic has changed and we've urbanized, and kind of one of the unpleasant things about Austin right now is that there's a real tension between people who are comfortable in an urban environment and people who want to be more suburban or even rural. And somehow they've got to make peace with each other. And you know, a lot of our city's problems at the city level and, you know, the kind of things that the mayor has to deal with have to do with the fact that, I mean, Austin used to be run by neighborhood people in West Austin. And that 10-1 thing changed that somewhat. But there's still that tension. There's still the tension between people, especially people who wish that Austin hadn't turned into what it's turned into, which is like this great cultural explosion that a lot of us are excited about and really think is great. Some of those people say, oh my God, I can't stand this happening in my city. How can we get them on board? You know, maybe we can't. But that's a difference. I mean, we always sort of had that thing. We had people who didn't want Austin to grow, so they said, well, let's just not build roads and then nobody will come here. So they've been there for a while, but there's still a lot of tension there. And, you know, they're kind of losing the battle because Austin is an urban, a very hip, urban, and culturally exciting and creative place, and a weird place, and a wired place. And this is only going to get, from my perspective, better. From their perspective, maybe not so much. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, John L., so much. Fantastic.
Want to learn more about John? If you're in Austin, just go to any tech, politics, or music event, and he's probably there. Or you can go to weblogski.com. With the Big Lebowski, I'm Scoop Sweeney. This is the Plutopia News Network, 20 minutes into the future.